Well, that was weird.
I think we lost everybody.
Yeah, I don't know why it cut out.
Huh. Yeah, it said something about
somebody else starting up a thing on the same thing, but I don't think, maybe Doug got his accounts
mixed up. Got a phone call, maybe that's what it was. Yeah. But anyway, I guess I think I pretty much finished what I had hoped to say, but about this post-money possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to look at his work, but I just haven't had the time yet to. I'm kind of in a busy state until end of June, and then I'll have time to sit down and have a look, a serious look at the work. You know, so.
I have, I'm the same way. I have to limit my participation to what I can actually pay attention to. So the Bateson, working with Bateson and this new Dave Berloffler group is really taking up all my time, because that's a lot of time. And also I tend to review these calls. So I have to sort of think about my priorities and what I can do well, you know, because I don't want to overextend myself. At any rate, I was really interested in that convergent divergent view that you were offering, and I was wondering if I got it right, what you were saying, or is it possible that we could be doing both at the same time? In a sense, these calls are a form of creating a center. We can have multiple centers, but I think each of us are sort of converging in ways when we make these calls happen. And I think there may be divergence going on as well. There are boundaries and there are margins, and they're shifting in these online communities very quickly, even sometimes before they can get defined. And I think that's my challenge as a communicator in online communities, is how can I make accurate reports from the margins? I'm participating in so many different kinds of these kind of arrangements, both here and elsewhere, and as I'm sure all of us are doing. So I think this is something I think Nora is sensitive to. And I think she's, that's what I find about her work is so compelling, is she's very much into this, the difference between data and warm data. And hi, Michael, welcome back. We all got
the technology. All got turned off.
we all got deleted. it's magic.
You're on mute, Michael.
You're on mute.
I was just going to say, it speaks to what we've been talking about, in a way.
I'm totally, Doug, I'm totally traumatized now. I've been bumped off. I've been deleted, and now they've let me back in from the wilderness. I was in the void for a while there. How's everyone feel? Are we feeling all grounded now?
I don't know what happened. Might have been an auto kickoff. I noticed it was at the top of the hour, so it might have been after an hour and a half. However, it's set up. I don't know.
It interrupted my patterns, that's for sure.
Mine too.
It's normally scheduled for 2 hours. To come back to your point about divergence and convergence, I understand your point about that. However, the idea comes from essentially looking at systems theory at the largest scale. And therefore, it's not a choice. It's what the system does. And in a divergent world, you know, the systems up to this point have been in this exponential expansion. And in an exponential expansion, the world is divergent. The way people form and do things is in a world where things are moving apart from each other. And in a asymptotic system at the largest level, we are in a situation where the links between people are now moving together. So that doesn't mean to say there aren't divergent and convergent things going on all the time. It just means that at the larger scales, from a systems perspective, that is what's going on. So, I tend to say peripheralization because I'm sort of interested, because I think if we understood what was going on there, I think it would, it has consequences in terms of how we understand what's going on. And so that was what I was trying to work out in my text. And it is part of the discussion of what we're doing, you know, this move towards post. I am entirely in agreement with the move towards post money kind of approach. And I had an argument at some point when I was first talking about these ideas too, with somebody who's sort of saying, well, in a, you know, societies are not equilibrium. So, because these system dynamics has to do with equilibrium, finding equilibrium in a sense. And the argument is that a society is never it's always far from equilibrium. And in a context far from equilibrium, the chaotic functions are as important as any sort of systems drive. But I'm not sure that I buy the argument. So again, I think because the argument goes that, you know, the world is switching from a divergent world to a convergent world. And we're on the part of the slope where things are happening very, very quickly. And when things are happening very, very quickly is when the forces are clearest. We are going towards a system which will be far from equilibrium. And there, these other effects can come into play. But I think right now we're in a situation where, so I almost think that, it's an argument I have with myself about this. Are we in a situation where we can do a lot right now? And I think we can if we work on it. But I also think in a way, what's going to happen is going to happen somewhat irregardless of what we do, because we're in this massive change of the system and none of us understand it. And so we can try things, and maybe somehow the trying is part of the system trying to correct itself. And so the trying is important, but I'm not convinced that any of our efforts to try is really what's going to matter in the end. I think it's the system moving to massive change.
Then, so I'm wondering about the personal,
personal me too.
In system, and where where's the personal in the network? Right now, I feel that these arguments can be used in different ways. Like we all heard about the creative destruction of capitalism, but what if it's not creative destruction? What if it's just destruction? And what is it that we're talking about when we're talking about private gain at the expense of public pain? So we distribute our economy so that private persons receive the benefits of the large public pain, because the public sacrifices a great deal to maintain conditions so that private individuals can flourish. But it seems to be that there's a form of capitalism, some are calling it cannibal capitalism, which is kind of like a virus that's taking over corporate capitalism, where there's no giving back happening. They're not paying taxes. They're working their people to death. And the ecologies are profoundly disturbed by the presence of these large corporations that take and don't give back. And then they cut their losses and they leave. So I think there's I still think there's a lot of convergent and divergent forces. I think that, is it centripetal and centrifugal forces? There's the body, and there's a center, and there's stuff, and there's the inside and the outside, and there's movement. I can't walk across a room, put one leg in front of another leg, and make that happen if I don't have a sense of above, below, left, right. So these are the kind of things that orient me in a space with others. Then I can, we can make a deal. But if it's, if we can't, if we don't know where top, where the ceiling is and where the floor is, we're in real trouble. And I think that's what's happening more and more in our, these, the environments that we're in right now. You know, you're just talking, you're just heads in a little box. And you have different backgrounds. I notice, by the way, Michael, you've changed the decor. You changed some a picture.
You noticed.
Yeah, the guy on the left used to be on the right, on my right. You're left, right? Is that Walt Whitman, by the way? Who is that?
That's just a cowboy.
Oh, he looks a lot like a iconic photo of Walt Whitman, sort of slouched.
Yeah. You noticed that? Yeah, I purposely changed the background.
Yeah. So I'm just saying how but I think these are, this is why I have almost a phobic response to when I watch these videos and I see like 10 heads stacked on top of one another and they're all like yakety yak or eating popcorn or someone's running to the bathroom, whatever. And I want that analogical feedback. I want to look in the person's eyes. Right. I want to hear the voice. I want to see the gesture.
Right.
All at the same time. And that's where we've had these conversations, these debates in a way, because I think it's all about aesthetics, really. And some people don't respond. I have a visceral, it makes me sick to my stomach, which is why I pled, please, let's just have one way of looking at this. But I understand other people have a different response.
Well,
I have to make my choice. This may be a divergent, convergent tension here. And I might just have to say, goodbye, you guys. I can't take this anymore. I've had enough.
because the way I look at it is we're a small scale system. And from my understanding and working with my body, it's gone off equilibrium.
Right.
And I've had to come back and I'm embedded in a system. You know, from my township to the, you know, going on that I have little control over. And I've just come to learn to accept it and pay attention to the immediacy, even here when I'm talking to, you know, across this space, because I'm trying to maintain a certain grounded equilibrium, but I can feel sometimes across this space, you know, through this medium, I don't have the same multi-modes of sensing, but the ones I do have, it's like a blind person, their hearing goes up. Wow. So I kind of look at this like you notice the background and it affects you differently, John, and I totally accept that. I just work at just paying attention somatically, which means my whole body, of how am I being affected by just listening to what you were talking to and Jeffrey and, you know, sometimes your tone of voice gives me a kind of tweak like this. Okay. You know, but that's just me. I just own that, you know, because if you were in front of me, I might have the same tweak too. You know,
I give you a tweak.
Sometimes your tone of voice coming across has an effect. I just own it, you know, because we are, that's how we process through the tone in that, even through here. That's so, it is different than if I was in physical space with you. It would be different because I would have much more to work with, if that makes sense.
Definitely.
Sure.
As I discovered when I met Marco and Heather in prison.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So these are extremely artificial environments we're in, but we don't have to be artificial.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Authentic, if that's our intention, We can be authentic with one another, and we can let each other know.
Well, I go to a movie.
This has nothing to do with you. I'm being triggered by something else.
Exactly. Like I go to a movie, I purposely open myself up to the stimuli, and people don't like it because I like to laugh and cry, and you know, artificial or not, this is the real me, if that makes sense.
Right. But I think that's a danger. I think we're all sort of grappling with socially and collectively. And I think Doug mentioned something about the last call. He characterized something that I said as a divide between the generations.
I
just wanted to respond that I don't think it's a divide. I think it's a difference.
Yes.
Most of my adult life was before the internet. All of my childhood, most of my adult life was before the internet. There are now people who are reaching their maturity now, who are mature adults who've only lived with the internet. And and there have been dramatic differences that I think are going to, you know, disappear really soon. Just like Margaret Mead, when she was talking to some young people and they said, "Oh, Margaret, we love you. You're like one of us." And she says, "No, my dears, I was born before the atomic bomb."
Yeah.
So there are things that I know that you do not know.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Right.
But these are differences. They're not necessarily disconnects.
Right.
And that's what I'm wanting, because in the many ways, young people I've noticed are brilliant people making sense the best way they can, and in ways that, you know, I didn't have to deal with the tensions and stresses that they are having to deal with. And they're not going to know the glorious experiences that I had in real time with real live people.
Yeah, right.
And we got a lot of interesting things happened that are not happening. I'm not seeing those things happen anymore. I think the arts, the performing arts especially, are looking more and more like computers and robots generated this. And I see that as a lack, as a loss of the analogical, the richness and the depth of the analogical.
Well,
I'm not saying it's inevitable, though. I think there are going to be enough young people who are going to say, "Hey, let's go back to the good old days where people hung out and met each other face to face in a bar or cafe, and turn off our fucking smartphones." But that will probably be a minority.
To be fair, there are far more cafes around today than there were when I was a young man. It's definitely true.
True.
I mean, there may be the same number of bars. But in terms of the cafes, these have mushroomed across the planet.
And that's right.
And now, obviously, they're kind of social activity spaces, but they're not quite social activity spaces the way they were when I was a young man. They're something very different. But
right. Computers instead of books, more computers instead of books. But I want to say,
connections are weak rather than strong, right?
Yeah, it's not like a group of people have their own bubble in the cafe.
Yeah.
But I want to speak to something that you brought up, John, that I think is significant, and the danger, bringing awareness to the danger of part of what you're talking about, and I totally 100% agree with that. But I do think maybe I'm just bringing in my spiritual practices, my recovery practices have taught me how to regulate, be aware of the danger without letting the danger, the real fact of danger infect me in such a way that I've been infected in the past, where after my trauma with the tractor, I lived in a high state of paranoia and panic for about a year and a half, and I'm not going to go back there anymore. But I can still regulate and pay attention to panic arising when I'm walking down the street if I feel something's going on. I haven't pushed away panic, but I've learned how to regulate this and be sensitive to it and have strategies, even if it's just feeling my feet on the ground sometimes. If that makes sense. That's the kind of somatic intelligence I think would help these times from my point of view.
I mean, I have to reflect on the fact that one of my most important communities for my ongoing life are you guys, these little boxes online, you know, and you've become half my universe almost, you know, maybe not half, but a significant chunk of my universe, you know.
Yeah,
I worry about that sometimes.
Well, yeah,
I had my first argument with my wife in maybe 4 or 5 years. We don't argue because she either shuts down, or if you imagine me attempting to argue, laugh at me.
I've seen it. you get really quiet.
but with it's different with people that I'm very close to, because I'm free to experiment new ways, even if they're negative ways. So, but I was trying to articulate what is going on here, not necessarily specific names, which I've mentioned all of y'all's names before to her, but to actually communicate that I'm having such strong relationships with the three of you here, with the 10, 15, 20 people that frequent here. It's still a foreign concept, though she understands what's going on. But I couldn't articulate to her that we are changing the world.
We are. Nice. That
what it seemingly is simple conversation or chat room or talking about books or writers groups is really the closest we have come as a species to changing the world through this medium here. And there's still quite a bit of work to be done, as we constantly know. But so I'm going outside of that argument. It was a very small argument, so maybe half a day of silence, and this week has been super good communicating with her. We're back to articulating some of the visions we've had in the past, which was starting up a camp for troubled individuals or those with disability, which we don't have the money or the means or the know-how to do that just yet, but it's still in the back of our mind. Perhaps it can be met online once we get a little more stuff up and rolling here. But I'd like to go back to the divide between what I typed and what I heard. And I went back and listened to it, and you said generational shifts in the conversation. But I was listening. I didn't have any face-to-face contact because I was listening.
Oh, right.
Driving. So, and I take Post-it notes illegally, I guess. That's my form of texting while driving.
Wonderful.
Actually, well, I'm saying my notes were actual text while driving with a pen and a Post-it.
So, now that's dangerous.
Not too dangerous, because they're sticky and I can still use one hand.
Oh, that's interesting. So I said shift. I didn't say divide.
Right.
I accepted.
But I completely misunderstood. And I guess what I'm getting at is I didn't have that face-to-face. And perhaps if I watched you one-on-one with during the conversation, I would have had, and I wouldn't have been distracted by what was going on while driving.
Yeah.
And I would have taken better notes, which leads to misunderstandings, no matter how small.
I totally accepted your report is accurate. I didn't, but now you've told me that I said shift, and what I meant was difference. But you know what? It's all up for grabs. You know, it can change every day. We're changing and revising and, oh, I forgot to say this, or I said too much about that, or I don't believe that anymore, but I might believe this. I think these are the kinds of liminal zones that we're going in and out of all the time, and we're trying to do our best to update each other when we get together again, because you influence me. All of you have a big influence on me. When I leave here and I go out into the streets, I'll think about something that somebody has said. Maybe a book they've recommended, a movie they saw, an anecdote, something personal, and I will be continuing to resonate with that. So I think there is that's a communal spirit that I want to maintain and preserve the quality of our attentions so that that kind of thing can happen. This is something that used to happen a lot in the real world, and I'm seeing it dry up. So I'm saying, great, we're using this technology not to sell anything to each other.
No, we're
not trying to commodify our relationships here. And that would disturb me. And I think we've all had that experience of having rapport with someone, and then we find out they're trying to sell us something. And I was like, oh, get me out of here. And that fortunately is not happening here. But I do feel the tensions and the stresses around having to monetize relationships, or how to have relationships that are free of monetization, but there has to be some setup so that that people's work can get some sort of protection, so that they can create effectively rather than participate in this creative destruction tendency as we start to put price tags on everything, even our relationships. It's very, very sad when that happens. And I think it's happening on a large scale. People just don't have any money. And what do you do when you don't have any money? You're going to go out and take someone out to dinner. You know, you're going to enter into intimate relationships with people when you can't go to a movie or a play. I mean, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when people turn to drugs and they want to escape.
Yeah.
Because in our culture, you're shamed.
Mm-hmm.
You're shamed if you can't pick up the check.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens when people who are at the bottom, and most people are not at the top, they're on the bottom. And then there are some people who are in the middle, but those middle positions are getting squeezed out too. As the economy changes, the way things, and retail is vanishing. That was what employed most people, and all those metal managers, they're going to disappear. But I think what Davor is saying is the top echelon, which, you know, that ruling elite has had a function of looking forward, reading the tea leaves or doing astrology or whatever technique they were trying to pull off to implement, you know, some sort of, to create, they had a function within the system that they no longer do. This is what Davor is saying. So it's not about the CEO, which CEO runs the company. They're just a slot in the matrix, just like everybody else. But because everything's changing so rapidly, lawyers and doctors and CEOs, they're all going to be affected dramatically by these changes. And so it's not just the plebs. And that's where we're getting moving more and more towards a lose-lose. Because how can you have a capitalist system when nobody has any capital except for a handful of people at the top? And that's what I think, in a way, I sort of agree with Rushkoff. It's sort of supporting the status quo to some extent by giving basic universal income. But if it makes people a little bit happier to know that they're not going to be hungry tomorrow, then they may be functioning at a higher level, because they're not in survival mode.
But that
erodes community faster than anything else. It's people who are borderline starving or afraid that they can't feed their families. That erodes everyone's relationships.
I think the argument is also a transition to the kind of post-money. Because ultimately, if everybody's getting the basics to survive within a monetary economy, then it's not only a small step from there to get rid of money and just do it anyway.
That's right.
Which is really where we want to go in a way, right? Right.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. I think we do here. I think there's a growing consensus. It's like, how are we going to make that happen, though?
Yeah.
If we don't really, really want it. Personally, I want this. You want it. It has to become personal for it to really, so that we can use these networks, I think, in creative ways that don't support only the status quo, trying to make a buck from all of it.
I just want to say that exchange between you and Doug about however it came about of divide versus difference is right on the way I think about working with my own children. I'm not divided. There's a generational thing, and I want to honor the difference between us. and not promote a division between us. They're adults now. When they were under a certain age, that was different. I had responsibilities, but now my daughter's 27, my son's 34. That little phrase you guys work with of seeing difference and not making it a division, to me is really it cuts across so many ways if we could just see differences and not divisions so much.
Well, I think about Nora Bates' statement. So she says, the future isn't in our young. It's in the relationship between our young and our elders.
Yes, and Stephen Jenkinson's Come of Age book is just about that.
And that's what culture is.
Yeah.
Culture is the transmission of knowledge from one generation to the next generation.
Yeah.
And that's you know, what it's all about. So I think we're all being incredibly stressed. And I think Doug has been a spokesperson for these intergenerational exchanges and how valuable they are.
I think so too.
Younger and those who are elder and those who are younger.
Right.
We're all beneficiaries of those kinds of friendships happening. And I think it's a glorious thing that we're having these kind of communications that, you know, we weren't necessarily provided for by the neighbor next door, you know, over the fence, chatting, gossiping with your neighbor. It might be mildly pleasant or unpleasant, but it may not have been, they may not be sharing necessarily your values or what you're most interested in, but they're the closest in proximity to you. And I think this is the benefit of this kind of community, because we're basically sort of choosing to be here because we want to be with people who are interested in the same things we're interested in, or they're interested in different things, but that we can come together and sort of, you know, swap information and try to find some common ground. So I think this is a wonderful thing that we can do this internationally. So we can hang out with Gabor, who's in Berlin. He stays up late to do this, but I think it's a great thing that this technology is providing us to have these kind of relationships, which are much more complex, I think, than the sort of traditional neighbor next door kind of thing.
Well, I like dancing with the differences of all of us. I really do. I like dancing. I like feeling even the, you know, when you're dancing, there's a moment you got to freeze. You got to feel the tension to move or to whatever. Fortunately, I'm in a place that I'm more flexible in my outlook to be relaxed to do that. I think that's a big component for me, is learning how to relax a little bit and not freeze up so much. But I know where that comes from. That comes from just fucking my body up so much.
Well, I was going to say, on that positive note, we'll stop.
And thank you guys for handling the perturbation of the technology today. I think we've recovered from our trauma really quickly.
Yeah. I don't know if the recording is going to be continuous. It might be in two pieces.
Our split personality culture. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
I learned a lot, as always.
I'll lead next week's meeting, and then we'll do the break after that.
Great.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.